As you know, we love hearing about all kinds of history and heritage to do with Cornwall here on the programme, which is exactly what we're going to be doing right now. Crescent Curnow has a book launch coming up tomorrow ahead of the World Heritage Status 20th anniversary later this year. And the book is called The Great Trek, and it's being released as part of the World Heritage Site 20th anniversary celebrations. And it looks at our mining heritage and how Cornish know-how traversed seas as far as Mexico. So I'm now joined in the studio by Ainsley Cox from the Cornish Mining World Heritage Site office and the author of The Great Trek, Dr. Sharon Schwartz. Hello, both of you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us, Emma. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope you feel a bit cooler in here with the air con on than you do outside.
Absolutely, but this is outside is rather like being in Tierra Caliente. In Mexico. It's something we're quite used to.
I bet, yeah. And you've just kind of handed me a copy of the new book, which I was just reading the inside index of. And I was just saying to you, Sharon, that I just love the smell of new books. And you were saying that you love the smell of old books as well.
I do. I love all books. I think there's a place for books rather than just things electronically held. And I'm very proud of my library. Yes, I collect books.
Do you?
Yes.
How many would you say you have in your collection?
Oh, thousands.
Really? At home?
Multiple thousands. Yes.
Do
at home.
You?
Yes.
You've had to have a house specially created around your library, have you?
We have a converted barn, and it's an office and a library with a spiral staircase leading up to the top section. So yes, it's it's the brainchild of my partner, Dr. Martin Critchley, who, big shout out to him because he's on the bus between Moynihan and Dublin. He's flying in later today. He's the other half of the Cornubian Press, and I owe him a tremendous debt of thanks for all the work he's put in to bring this book to fruition.
Oh, well, we're going to hear more about it very, very shortly. Ainsley, do you have a library at home?
I do. It's not as extensive as Sharon's, unfortunately, but I'm getting there slowly.
You're right there. There is something about books, isn't there? And I mean, we listen to some audio books at home with the children, but there's nothing like having a book in your hands. Yeah. Right. But we're not here to talk about that, really, are we? Ainsley, let's just start with you, if that's okay. So if we can start with the anniversary of the World Heritage Status, and if I can just ask you, why did our mining landscape receive the accolade?
It was appreciated right back in the 1990s that the surviving historic mining landscapes across Cornwall and West Devon, that's metalliferous mining landscapes, particularly not China clay, were of at least of international significance. So over the course of the years coming up to the end of the 1990s, a bid was put together to achieve World Heritage Site status. That's UNESCO World Heritage status. So we would be on a par with sites like the Taj Mahal or the Tower of London, Stonehenge, that kind of thing culturally. So in the early 2000s, our bid was started in earnest, hosted by Cornwall County Council, as it was then, with support from West Devon Borough Council and Devon County Council. And then we went through a research phase, and Sharon was part of that alongside myself and others at the time, and we finally achieved the status in July 2006, hence our 20th anniversary this year.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? That must be so special to be a part of.
It is, yeah. It's fantastic to seen it right from the start, right through to inscription, and experienced and been part of everything that's happened to it and around it since.
Mm. It makes you just feel so different, doesn't it, about living somewhere like Cornwall, knowing that you're a part of this.
Yeah, I think many people will be aware of like the Cornish type engine houses out there in the landscape because they're sort of everywhere. But that's part of what makes Cornwall and West Devon so highly distinctive. Mm. And to have that finally recognised on the international stage was an incredible achievement. And I remember the day when we received the news like it was yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Very, very special for you. What impact has the status had then over the past two decades?
We've undertaken work in different areas. I'm the research and information officer of the World Heritage Site team, so I collate and manage research and information on all aspects of the site, the physical aspects of the site, you know, the engine houses and so forth, but also the history pertaining to the sites and some of the people involved in it to a degree. But we've been World Heritage Site status can be regarded as a sort of a badge of quality, if I can put it that way. Mm-hmm. So where project partners and stakeholders have come forward with proposals to undertake conservation to mine site buildings, perhaps, or for streetscapes improvements in places like Camborne, for instance, and Redruth, they can use the World Heritage Site status as an extra lever to draw down valuable external funding. Because our funding is very much limited, but there are funds out there which you can draw down, and saying you're part of the World Heritage Site and this building perhaps is very much part of the what makes the World Heritage Site important is a fantastic tool to achieve that funding. And we've secured upwards of or £92 million has been allocated since 2006, upwards of £92 million through using the World Heritage Site status as that lever, as I said.
My goodness, I mean, that's a huge sum of money. So what does that enable you to do then?
Work on a mine site. Obviously, our historic mine buildings are deteriorating over time, so they need consolidation, you know, conservation works to keep them standing. But also in towns like Redruth and Camborne, for instance, the streetscapes themselves often need some degree of conservation work. And sites like the Butter Market site in Redruth, with its attached Wheelpeaver purser's office and the mining exchange building next door to that, those have been conserved and repurposed and opened up to the public again very recently. Mm. And again, that's very much supports our aims and objectives within the World Heritage Site office and partnership. And it's brilliant for the communities where those buildings are. So it's great for the people of Redruth.
What plans have you got going forward?
To do more of the same, basically, to continue to raise awareness and hopefully appreciation of the heritage we've got, and to work to protect that heritage with myself and my colleagues. You know, we give planning advice on all of the planning applications that come in Cornwall within the 10 areas of the World Heritage Site, and we'll continue to do that to make sure the outstanding universal value, which is the UNESCO terminology for what makes it internationally important, to preserve that outstanding universal value going forward.
Why do you think it's so important for us to remember our local heritage?
I think through heritage, heritage leads to identity, I guess. You know, if you've got an understanding of heritage and where you've come from, that informs your own character, and it's certainly informed my own character in various weird and wonderful ways. But it's very much part of the whole story and what makes Cornwall distinctive. And I think that if people have a great appreciation for not just the impact that mining made locally, but made on the global stage, and this is where Sharon's work with the Great Trek book and so on comes into it, because it's telling a good part of that wider story.
Thank you. Well, that links in to Sharon then. So, Sharon, you've written The Great Trek and you've focused on the links between the Southwest and Mexico. What impact did the Cornish have on Mexico?
Immense. Immense. I've travelled to many, many parts of the Cornish diaspora, and I can honestly say, with the exception of South Australia, Mexico has one of the most vibrant, vital parts of the modern Cornish diaspora. It has the world's largest paste festival, which is held every October. The streets are full of paste shops. There's Methodist chapels. There's a beautiful cemetery, the most important of its kind in the Latin Americas, and the most well-preserved and cared for by the daughter of a man who looked after it for 46 years, who married into the Cornish family of Skews. And she now has taken her father's role as caretaker of the cemetery. And the Cornish actually helped popularise football in places like Pachuca. Oh. So, yeah, immense. And, I mean, there is even a pipe and drum band called St. Piran's Pipe and Drum Band that wear the Cornish tartan. Yes, and last year we actually did a collection in Cornwall and the diaspora for those young men and women to have tartan cloth to make kilts, and we actually took the tartan material with us last year in our luggage and delivered it to Rea del Monte and handed it over there to them. So yeah, it's a Cornish language, music, dance, everything is going on in Mexico. It's incredibly important.
Wow. How much of your time do you spend in Mexico then?
For the last couple of years, I've been over for each Paste Festival, but I'm always in Mexico, if not physically, then certainly mentally, because it's dominated my life for the past 2 or 3 years to produce this book, which has entailed going to 6 archives in 3 countries to extract the relevant material to bring this story to fruition for the first time. And by a remarkable coincidence, the 200th anniversary of the arrival of the first steam engines and the start of the first engine, which was the dawn of the Industrial Revolution in Rio del Monte, coincides with the 20th anniversary of the Cornish Mining World Heritage Site. And this is our third such collaboration over the 20 years that the World Heritage Site has been in existence. So, yeah, it's been a very fruitful relationship.
So Talk to me a little bit more then about the book, you know, what is in it. And, you know, this must have been quite a journey creating this book, because there must have been so many, you know, archives to go through.
Absolutely. Well, the book basically follows the trials and tribulations, as hence the title, a story of a tragedy and triumph, of a group of men who were recruited by the Rio del Monte Mining Company to take 1,500 tons of machinery and equipment across the Atlantic in 4 wooden sailing ships to Mexico.
Wow.
the enterprise was directed by John Taylor, and those who are aficionados of Cornish mining will instantly recognise his name, for he was one of Britain's top mining engineers at the time, and he had cut his teeth in the mining industry at mines near Tavistock, but also had pioneered steam technology for deep load mining and pumping, particularly in the consolidated mines in Gwennep. So he basically wanted to replicate the what he'd done at consolidated mines in helping to rehabilitate a group of failed and flooded mines and turn them into a successful venture. And that's precisely what they eventually did. Although it didn't make much money for the British, it laid the foundations for future prosperity of those mines. And hence mining went on in Rio del Monte Pachuca well into the 21st century. So, it laid the foundations for the revival of the fortunes of the silver mines there. And of course, all the Cornish, the enterprise was staffed by the Cornish. So they went over in those scores of them, and including my own family. And in fact, one of the first 8 Cornishmen to set foot in Rio del Monte was a cousin to me.
Gosh, wow.
So, yeah, it's very personal.
How special. Yeah. Wow. Mm. This must have been some feat, you know, moving, you know, like you say, 1,500 tons of specialist mining machinery and equipment from Falmouth across the Atlantic.
Exactly. And, you know, in wooden sailing ships.
Yeah.
And the minute they landed or they arrived off the coast, everything that could go wrong went wrong. And I mean, to cut a long story short, because it is a long story, it took them over 12 months to travel 266 miles inland through Tierra Caliente, battling yellow fever and malaria, which claimed the lives of probably half of the party, and then up very steep mountainsides onto the tableland. So you're going from a steamy tropical climate to a temperate climate with a huge drop in temperature, so you get lots of fog and it's very cold. Sometimes it's icy in the mornings, and then you have to cross this tableland. And the party anticipated that being the easiest part of the journey, but unfortunately the rains ushered in early that year in 1826, and they had to battle severe flooding.
Wow.
It was an ordeal, but eventually one that turned to triumph when that first engine was started on the 21st of August 1826.
So this whole book is kind of covering that whole...
The whole book covers the journey made in 1825, in the spring of 1825, from Falmouth, where these 4 ships sailed forth, arrived off the Mexican coast, and then they had to disembark all of that machinery and equipment and get it up to an altitude of over 8,000 feet above sea level.
Okay.
Using just wagons and mules.
I'm just looking at a picture in here, kind of halfway through the book. There's a lovely picture of you both with the Cornish flag. That was in, what, 2024?
Yes, we went to one of the places that the company set up a depot at along the route to mine the machinery. And that place is called Lencero. It's now a beautiful heritage site. It's an hacienda, and it once belonged to the president of Mexico, Santa Ana. So it has, you know, huge significance to the Mexican nation. But we were there for an entirely different reason, because the Cornish had been there. You know. In fact, the majority of the movement of the machinery was done by the British military. And because of that, that's what ensured its success. These were ex-soldiers from the Royal Artillery that hauled all that machinery inland. So it was run very much like a sort of, you know, an army procedure, where you followed orders, you did what you were told to do, and you got the job done. And at that time, I don't think any other nation in the world could possibly have taken on the logistics alone of that. Were tremendous, you know, 500 to 700 mules that had to be corralled, fed, minded every single night, and all the men had to be looked after and fed. I mean, it was just a remarkable feat in so many ways, and worthy of commemoration for the men that died, but also worthy of celebration. Mm. And the celebration bit comes this year, when that first convoy of machinery rumbled down the road towards the heart of Rio del Monte, bearing the first steam engine on May the 1st. So, yeah, it was one of the most remarkable stories in Cornish mining.
Wow. Do you know what? I love my job, because I get to, you know, learn about all these fascinating pieces of you know, history and heritage that I wasn't really fully aware of. And I think that's the beauty of the book that you've written, and also the beauty of the launch that you've got tomorrow night. So it's happening tomorrow. Can people come and join the launch party, Ainsley?
Yes, it's a free-to-enter event, but you need to book in advance.
Okay.
We've got a few spaces left, though, fortunately. So if people search for Book Launch The Great Trek online, they'll come up with the Eventbrite page, and just book via Eventbrite and hopefully secure your place. But we'll have live music and refreshments available, and some special guests as well. So it promises to be a fantastic evening.
I would also add that next week, next Wednesday evening, at the Poly at Falmouth in their Bijou Theatre, the documentary film, which accompanies this book, is being shown.
Oh, wow.
So you can book for that online through the Poly at Falmouth website.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. I'm also sitting here as well, just thinking, you know, there'll be a lot of our younger generation who are doing their GCSEs, A-levels, and thinking about careers in the future. And just listening to both of you talk, you're so passionate about the work that you do. I'd just be interested very quickly to hear why you wanted to get into the field of work that you did, and how you did.
For
maybe
me,
to inspire others.
Well, for me, it was family. I come from a long line of Cornish miners and engineers on both sides of my family. And when I was a little girl, my grandfather, Harry Polkinghorne, instilled such a deep fascination for the Cornish mining industry. He, of course, had been a mine blacksmith. He'd started his career at Trezavine Mine at Lanner, and finished his career at the Great Engineering Works Holmans of Camborne. So from a small age, I was very well aware of Cornish mining and the Cornish mining industry, but doing A-levels at school, found there was absolutely nothing taught to us at all about Cornish mining in the industrial and our part in the Industrial Revolution. Rather, it was all cotton in Manchester and Oldham and Preston and the coal fields of Lancashire and Yorkshire, but nothing about Cornwall. And yet I could look out of my school classroom and see the iconic chimney of Pentnendray Mine. You know, nothing taught about Trevithick. We heard about James Watt and George Stephenson, but nothing about our genius Richard Trevithick. So, yeah, I kind of fell into history. I went to university and read history, and I found that the most important and favourite course that I did was European Empires Overseas, and it looked at the Spanish and Portuguese in Latin America. And then I found that my own family had migrated to Chile, Mexico, Bolivia, Uruguay, various other places, and then I did my PhD on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And here you are still in Cornwall.
Well, no, I'm not in Cornwall. I actually live
Ireland.
In the Republic of Ireland, but I'm back and forth.
Yeah.
I am an exile, but I live a transnational life.
Yeah.
So I'm actually living out my own career.
Thank you. Ainsley, what about yourself?
It's similar to Sharon's experience in some way. When I was very young, I lived near a former large historic copper mine site, and the waste tips of that, the burrows of that, I used to play on occasionally when I was very very young. And at the time, I didn't know what they were. I didn't know the significance of it or why they were there or anything. But later on, after I left school, I started looking into it myself, you know, acquiring books on the subject and so on, and speaking to others. And then I developed a significant interest in it, because I could see this was something that went on my particular patch, but also across Cornwall and Devon more widely, that was genuinely important. So that led to a further study and then further than university coursework. And then I got on board with the World Heritage Site bid process in 2001. So I haven't looked back, really. So I've been very fortunate to having stuck with it all this time.
That's
really
wonderful to hear. Like I say, hopefully that might inspire, you know, people listening.
We're both incredibly passionate about being Cornish, about our heritage, and really the Cornish Mining World Heritage Site's been pivotal in the Renaissance in Cornish pride and identity, because Cornwall is mining and mining is Cornwall, and it has been for millennia.
Yeah. The World Heritage Site also has a number of other celebratory events coming up later in the year. We are also supporting a 360-degree immersive film presentation inside a special dome, and it's another free-to-enter event. It'll be at Crescent Curno in Redruth on the 18th of July, and then at Tavistock Guildhall in Tavistock on the 22nd of August.
Wonderful.
So please look at our website and social media for news about that over the coming weeks.
Thank you ever so both for coming in and chatting. It's been really, really interesting and informative. That's Ainsley Cox, Research and Information Officer for Cornish Mining World Heritage Site Office, and author Dr. Sharon Schwartz. And the book, The Great Trek, launch takes place tomorrow. Ainsley says, you know, if you go to the Crescent Curno website as well, and you can find out a lot more details there, but definitely worth going along to. Thank you both of you.
Thank you, Emma.
Emma Gill.